We're going to go ahead and reconvene the Story County Board of County Commissioners meeting. Next up, item number 16, which I almost blew out of the water early on here. This is discussion only, no action. This is an update from Community Chest Incorporated. Mr. Griffin.
Good morning, Commissioners. Sorry we have to follow all the bumps, but here we are. We got some great news this morning, and we'll make you feel good after this is done, I'm sure. I want to introduce Sherry Nevin, our board chair, and my left, Darren Berger, our principal, Berger Hannifin Architects.
Nicole, could you turn the lights off for a moment?
Yeah.
He's the protege of our late architect, Art Hannifin, whom I'll talk about more in just a minute. He's going to give you an overview of the update on the plans for the community center, phase two specifically. The interior of the library, try to give you some visual overviews of where we've come. He may go over this, so excuse me if I'm stealing a little bit thunder. He's almost done now with all of the architectural plans. He's going to get it to the engineers, and then we'll get it to permitting. So we should have this done, I'm guessing, by end of summer or the fall. I'll stop there and let Darren take over with the explanation of what he's done.
Good morning. Again, for the record, Darren Berger. I'm an architect of Berger Hannifin Architecture, and we're down in Carson City. Sean's right. This is one of the very first, or one of the many projects that Art Hannifin had done, and he started this many years ago, and I know Sean knows the history on that. I just want to say I'm honored to continue that on for Art Hannifin, and he'd be pleased to be here today and see this. So what we're proposing to do is, this is the existing building that was constructed, I think, about 5-6 years ago that we did. And this is to the south. This is where the baseball field is over in here. The swimming pool is over on this side. This is Carson Street along here. Way of orientation. So this is the north side of the building. What we're proposing to do is a two-story addition. This is the first level, and this is the second level here. Primarily what we're doing is a multi-purpose room and a library on the second floor. You would enter the building here on the north side. This is a circulation spline right through here in red. So you'd enter through here. This is a little office area. It has a counter so you can check people in or give them direction. Working down further here, you can turn and go up the existing stairs. This is going to be health center, social services here. It's seen a few different iterations in terms of its use, but that's what the vision is going forward. As right now, there's libraries occupying some of the space, and again, they're going to go upstairs. So this flight of stairs here will take you upstairs, as well as we will have an elevator to get you to the second level. And then as you continue through the circulation spline, there's some toilet rooms on either side, a kitchen, and then a set of doors that'll take you I'll just say out back, basically. And I think, we don't talk much about this in terms of design, but boy, this is going to be a wonderful south-facing little grassy area out here. I think that's just going to be a nice little area to hang out and have activities. We can service this area through this kitchen. There's going to be an opening here, a roll-up door with a counter, so you could have something going on out here in this grass area and be able to access the kitchen. I think that'll be really nice. Now, this is kind of the main function on the first floor. This is the multi-purpose room that we're proposing. You can play a half-court game of basketball. You can see the key right here, which, by the way, went out to the Warriors this weekend. Oh, my gosh. Wasn't expecting that. So half-court basketball here, or you could also land a stage in here, put on a performance, and we're showing in this plan that it could seat almost 100 people in there. And again, this space is a two-story volume So we've got plenty of room in there. And there's also talk about getting a climbing wall and locating it on this wall. This area that you're seeing here is yet another proposal, if funds allow. This is a daycare center. It has two toilet rooms, an open area, and a little kitchen area. And we thought we'd keep that in there as a placeholder. If funds allow, we can start working towards this, but we wanted to keep that on part of our drawing here. So as you go to the second floor, again, either by this elevator or by this set of stairs, you're going to arrive up here in this red area, which is the circulation spline. There's the elevator. There's a set of stairs. This is part of the existing upstairs through here. This is the teen center area. And then this is an existing open room. I think it sees a multiple of functions. We're going to make that part of the library. We're going to knock a hole in the wall right here along the exterior wall. There's a window. We've already planned for that. It's there's no structural implications. That wall's ready to come out. So this will become a meeting space. It can be a gallery space. You can sit around a table, or you could set up a podium in the front, put some tables and chairs in, and give a lecture. But that is accessed off the library. So, maybe you get an art exhibit, and you open this door, and people can, in the library, can meander in and out of that gallery. Or that door can be closed off for a more private function and still be accessed through a door here off this back circulation space. So a lot of flexibility and use with that space. So as you come down the corridor, you would first walk up to a check-in, check-out counter. This is a librarian area here, a desk and chair, a place for them to do their work. And then over to this side, we carved out a little space for processing. They get a lot of donations. They have to do work on books before they can put them into the library, and that's where this would be done. Here, adjacent to that, is a little research area. We'd have some computers and some chairs where you could sit down and get on a computer and do some research. The rest of this, what you're seeing is the stacks, the volumes of books in here. And these are little cubby reading nooks that we thought would be fun to have some glass in that you could then overlook. Again, this multi-purpose room is a two-story space where you could look out and into the, see what's going on in there. And then another little reading area here. If you could, the next slide. This is just a blowout so you could see the library with a little more clarity. There you go. If that is helpful. Again, there's that circulation spine. There's the elevator, the stairs. This is where you check in. There's the stacks and some reading nooks. We'll add another toilet room up there, and janitor's closet, and those kinds of things. Next one, please. So in elevation, we're really keeping with, we're not changing anything up. We're keeping with the existing architecture. There's the original structure right there. It's clad in metal. It's gray and red. The roof on this existing building is green. You can see a little bit of it here. Our building that we're proposing starts right here. That's that circulation spline. Little roof canopy over the main entry, and then this large gable structure right here, which houses the gym. The multi-purpose room is right here. And then this is the two-floor section. This is the end that is facing to the east. So real simple, straightforward structure, inexpensive to build. That's kind of how we landed on this, is we're trying to, you know, be good stewards of the funds that we have, and we think this is a really good fit in terms of bang for the buck, so to speak. And again, keeping and maintaining with the architecture that's already there. I think, of course, we need to go back to Bert and get approval, but I do not foresee that being a problem. And that's all I have.
Great. Any questions for Derek?
Yeah, I have several things to cover. Are we done with the slideshow?
Yes.
Nicole, would you turn the lights back on, please? Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, and I'm not sure which one of you may or may not be prepared to answer these. I knew Sean was going to be here today. This is actually the first I've had the opportunity to see the exciting plans. So a series of questions. Timing on beginning construction. Mike Nevin and I are trying to work with when we think we ought to pave the parking lot. You're obviously going to be getting rid of a whole lot of parking. We don't really want to pave it in the middle of pool season if we don't have to. But if you're going to start and cause dust and we got to cut down on some of our dust, what kind of timing are you looking at for groundbreaking?
Our plans are going to be wrapped up here by the end of next month. So August 1st, we would submit to the building department. And I would assume a building this size is going to take a couple months to review.
It won't. That's not the way we operate.
Okay, so we could be ready to start construction as early as mid-September.
Okay.
That's where we could be, but now that's up to Sean.
That'll work perfectly for us. Right, Mike? Second question is, it's a two-part question. Do you actually still intend at some point in time to turn ownership of the building over to the county? But that was part of the thought process way back when. I'd ask for you to get a hold of me so I can get a hold of legal counsel and find out, even though we don't have to pay anything for it, we've got some prevailing wage bid requirements that may or may not come into play. So if you remind me, I'll get a legal opinion from them so you know what you should or shouldn't do if we're going to take eventual ownership of that part. I also would like to talk to you, too bad our pool guy has left already, our insurance guy, but I definitely want to talk to you about the climbing wall. Those are like a whole new liability for us. I realize they're safer than I might think they are, but if the county's going to cover you under our umbrella insurance, which I believe we're trying to do, because we own the physical building or will own it or it's on our property, however that works, I definitely want to seek opinion on that climbing wall. And last, and Darren, I don't want to sound like a code guy, but please check with our fire marshal, Fritz Klingler. If you're going to put 92 or 94 souls in that amphitheater area, I don't see a secondary ingress egress for that particular part of the building.
Yeah, we have that.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a second door out, okay. And we're going to fully fire sprinkle that building as well. It's already prepped for that. The infrastructure's there.
Yeah, I remember that. That's right.
Okay. Thank you. That's okay, Sean.
Jack?
No questions. Looks good.
Great news.
I mean, yeah.
Any questions?
News.
So I'm thrilled that these plans have reached this stage of development and thrilled that Darren and his former mentor, Art Hennepin, began with this so long ago. It was in 1996 that Art sat down with six Virginia City High School students, Debbie and myself, to envision this drawing you're seeing before you. And it's taken me 20 years to be able to say what I'm about to share with you. All throughout that time, I don't believe there were many people who thought I would be able to share this news, except a few mule-headed souls like myself and my spouse. I remember my father telling me adamantly in 1997 after we bought our building to not do this because we would probably go broke. And that would be a very foolish thing to do. I remember my board members telling me, how can we do this now? We can't make payroll when we started. I remember more questions than I can share. And I had very few answers. On May 24th, I received a call from Richard Stoltz at the Pennington Foundation, and they awarded us $500,000 to finish phase two, conditional upon raising the balance of the $120,000, one-third of which I've already raised, and I believe I'll have the rest of it raised in the next 2 months. When we finished in 2012 building the first phase, I was looking at a wall that was larger than any wall I'd ever come up against, which is, how do you raise yet another $1 million when you've gone to every foundation you already know? And I was determined to try and do this with private money so we could avoid Davis-Bacon and so that we could avoid prevailing wage and save roughly $300,000. Darren and his team, Marcy and Ross Reese, have come in at $6,000. And we've spent roughly $70,000 on the plans, which leaves us with $936,000. And we've raised, as I said, all but $120,000 of that. And I have commitments for the balance. I'm waiting to hear from those foundations. I didn't believe I'd ever hear that phone call. I was crying when I got that phone call. There are several reasons. We do not have a development director in our office. In almost every nonprofit of our size, which is a mid-sized nonprofit now, there's a hired gun. There's someone that does this full-time for a living. Foundations as large as the Pennington Foundation, which is the largest foundation in Northern Nevada, can basically write checks to change lives regionally, statewide, and nationally. Most of the foundations I work with were mad because they hadn't stepped up to the plate. It took me 3 years of denials with them to get to the front door. Finally, Mr. Stoltz came up and met with me for over an hour, and it still took another 2 years to get to this place. They had never funded something this large outside of the Reno region. And now they have stepped up and they're funding Boys and Girls Clubs throughout northwestern Nevada and throughout eastern Nevada. It is more than an honor to say that this is now going to happen. It is truly a dream come true. And without the consistent, abiding support of so many people who never doubted what we were doing, it just wouldn't have happened. Debbie and I had numerous reasons to stop, to just walk away. But this is a facility that will remain in perpetuity for this community. And long after we're all in our graves, there'll be kids, there'll be families, there'll be gatherings, and there'll be something to celebrate. We live in a very precarious time right now. I know all of you read the news, and there isn't much to celebrate. But I have to say that this is a rare, unequivocal event for a small community like ours. And when it's done, and it will be done in a year or so, we will be the pride of this region. More importantly, there'll be a legacy for everyone to take advantage of. It's a public facility. It's not a private facility. And it will be left to the community, which is a wonderful thing. So, it took everything I could do not to share this news before today. I had to get permission from Pennington to say this publicly. We can't issue a formal press release without their blessing, but I have now shared the news with their blessing. And on Thursday night, when we celebrate our 25th year at the Red Dog, I will share it with all the staff who still do not know, unless they read the paper between now and then. So for all the people that have come and gone on this journey, one of my founding board members who died in 2000, and all the others who believed in us when we started, this is as much for them and the young people who started, who dreamt that this might happen, who are now all full-grown adults. So I just want to say thank you. We get to where we go sometimes on a long journey. And I think if you'd have told me it took 20 years at that time, I'd probably told you you were crazy. Naively, foolishly, I thought it would happen soon. But you have to earn the view. That's what Art told me. You have to earn the view. And that takes cojones. Excuse my Spanish. But thank you.
Well, Sean, you're the one that deserves it. Thank you. Twenty years of heavy lifting.
It's been quite a journey.
And I don't think anybody outside of your small nucleus did think you'd get to this point. Well done, my friend.
I suggest a round of applause.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you to Art and Sherry and Darren and his team and everybody else who isn't here.
Next up, one of our favorite topics. Item number 17, discussion only. We'll take no action. Val Lavelle presenting an update on the Virginia Range horses.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Pat, for putting me on the agenda today. I really appreciate it. My name is Valerie LaBelle Flatley, and I'm with the Virginia Range Wildlife Protection Association. And all of you know for sure that in March of 2015, an unprecedented agreement was signed between the Department, Nevada Department of Agriculture and Return to Freedom, which is a California-based group licensed to do business in the state of Nevada. And we are part of that agreement, and several other horse groups in the area are also part of the agreement. And what it's done, it's given us the ability to help manage our wild horses, which we had no control over prior to that. And one of the main components of this agreement is a humane birth control program that humanely manages the horses, so we hope to avoid no horses will be taken off the range, and the numbers will meet with the Nevada Department of Ag's approval. And they determine the range condition, and they determine the numbers. And we always seem to be in a little conflict there. Our numbers are usually less. Our assessments of the range are usually better than theirs. But fortunately, we've had a good winter, and there's plenty of forage out there right now. So they set a goal for the first year of 150 horses to be darted. They're darted with a dart gun, and it's a vaccine that you inject into the mare, and it's a series of two the first year. It's a primer and then a booster anywhere from 2 weeks after that up to a year to give them the second shot. And we have a great darting team. We've just sent four more people to Billings, Montana to be certified. And right now, 230 mares have been darted, and over 1,000 horses have been documented, which is a huge task. That means going out and taking pictures of these horses, inserting them on a page, you know, on the computer with pictures of each horse in each band, and then their input into what's called WIMS, Wild Horse Management. I've forgotten what it stands for, but it's a whole database that gives every piece of information you can imagine. So that's one of the main things that's been happening. And a lot of horses in the Virginia, you're not going to see anything specifically in Virginia City or close to town because those aren't advisable places to dart. You know, you really want more of a remote location. And these horses travel back and forth. We've got horses from Mound House, Mark Twain, from Dayton, the Highlands, you know, that travel through and then go back. And many of these horses have already been darted. Some of the other things that we're doing, education. I don't know if any of you have seen door hangers that were hung up on probably, I don't think we missed too many in Virginia City and Gold Hill. Diversionary feeding has been taking place to get horses out of neighborhoods off the roads where there's a problem. They're getting hit by cars or whatever. So they started a diversionary feeding program to move them away from the neighborhoods temporarily and get these horses darted and get them off of the streets. Fencing, a lot of fencing issues. A lot of the reasons these horses are getting into the neighborhoods because fences are broken or not. They're non-existent. And public safety. We've been working with the transportation department also to put up signage and whatnot. But one of the big things, and I have to thank Pat and all the commissioners, we've had a lot of support from Story County, emotional support and also some financial assistance, which has helped with a lot of these projects we're doing. And Mike Nevin also, I've called you on many occasions for questions and approvals for things that we're doing in Lockwood. Sheriff Antonoro has been very supportive, and I don't think I have forgotten anybody. If I have, I'm sorry. But so we've got a great team of volunteers and working with some of the businesses, specifically waste management down in Lockwood has been instrumental in getting some of this work done that we were initially going to have to pay for, and they took it over to help the community, and we couldn't have done that without them. So it takes a whole team to get this accomplished, and so far the agreement has been working very well between the horse groups and the Department of Ag, and we hope to see, not this year, you won't see it, but next year start seeing a reduction in horses, which will result in none of these horses being picked up and removed, which is a whole nother can of worms once that happens. So I just want to thank you again for everything that you've done to help us.
Thank you. I've got a few questions for you.
Sure.
Why do you suggest we'll start to see fewer horses next year?
Well, the mares that were darted, and they will continue to get boosted after that, will not be able to conceive. There won't be any, you know, as many foals. You're going to see a lot of foals right now because a lot of these mares were already in foal when they were darted, which doesn't hurt the foal at all.
These horses live a long time. And
they do.
We already know this range is over capacity,
yeah,
as is. And to be honest with you, I think that 230 is a drop in the bucket.
Well, it is, but this is
a good start.
It's a good start. It's a good start.
And now, from what I've read, it looks like the BLM is no longer going to use PZP, right?
That's not correct. They're not going to use it in the Pine Mountain area. They suspended that program because of some legal stuff. It had nothing to do with the birth control. The BLM has been doing PZP, birth control, for over 20 years
right,
in different areas
like,
of the country.
I read it looked like they were going to suspend the program.
I don't think they're going to suspend it in those other areas. I mean, I'm talking about Wyoming, Montana. I don't know where else they're doing it in Nevada. This was an experimental program in the Pine Nut Mountains just outside of, you know, just south of us. Not for the birth control, because they've already been using that, but just to see how it would affect the horses, you know, the population down there. And my understanding is once they get it settled, they're going to resume the birth control program.
And there's nothing going to go forward to relocate some of these horses from this range and move them somewhere else?
There's no place to move them. Unfortunately, all the other areas are just, they're all so full. I mean, when they pick up, you know, the Department of Ag picks up horses when somebody complains. They go to the prison, and it's about a two-week period where the Department of Ag takes care of all the feeding, et cetera, et cetera. And then they put out a notice to the public. If the public is interested, they have to go somewhere to find that information. It's not like in the newspaper, I don't think, about these horses are ready for adoption. They're not adoptable. They're totally wild. What happens to them? The horse advocacy groups have stepped up and gone to the auctions or gone to the prison and taking these horses, and now they've got to find homes for them. And I can attest to that. I spent probably a month over December trying to relocate 14 horses that had been picked up by the Department of Ag. And finally, Madeline Pickens took them. It's what you call a Christmas miracle, literally. We were hoping she'd take two or three, and she said she'd take them all. So all the horse groups, whether it's a rescue group or a sanctuary, they're full. They have no money. They have no more space, and they can only do so much. So to relocate them really isn't an option either. The best option we have is just to reduce the population. So, you know, we still want to see our horses out there. At least most of us do. And it'll be a viable, you know, solution for everybody. But it is going to take time. It
is. So what type of diversionary water feeding program do we have going on right now, and where is it?
Well, it was down, they started one down on Toll Road. That's been a real issue down there. They started one down there. There's one over what's called the Meadows over by DeMonte, and one at DeMonte Ranch, and over on Rhodes Road off of 395. You know, those horses were a problem coming onto 395. And none of this, even the fencing that we've done and working on the cattle guards, nothing is 100% solution.
Right.
But it's every little step that we take is helping. It's
so,
helping.
So we have a problem right here in town.
We do.
We have horses all over the place. On election day, there were 26 horses down next to the polling area.
Where was your polling place?
Down here in the old bank, building, two streets.
Oh.
C Street.
Yeah.
And that one block, there were 26 horses. There were only eight there this morning, but there were 26 last Tuesday.
Yeah.
Other horses at the south end of town. And so they're a problem because they're on the roads. They don't belong on the roads. They're in people's yards. My neighbors had her lawn trampled numerous times. Railing going into her house broken by the horses. I mean, if you get on your lawn, they trample it. They break the shingle heads. They rip the grass out by the roots. And since we are in town, I know the word is fence out of state, but if they're not supposed to be in town to start with, so you shouldn't have to fence your home to keep the livestock out. So what's your recommendation? How are we going to handle our problem right here within the town limits? Because everybody likes to look at the horses, but nobody wants to clean up after the horses.
Right. Well, it's all part of the bigger picture, Marshall. We've tried to get diversionary feeding started in Virginia City. We're still waiting for the Department of Ag to approve a place to do it, to get them out of town. And part of the problem, too, is why we put up those door hangers and we put in two public announcements in our local papers stating, you know, how to handle the wild horses, not to feed them, not to water. It's illegal to water in Virginia City and Gold Hill. And just driving around, we see different people who have water buckets out, big troughs for the horses. We're notifying Jerry and letting him know so he can go talk to these people. We don't want to engage with them. If we see them out there, we'll talk to them, but we don't want to engage with them. It should be done legally, you know, through the sheriff's office to remove that. And people are stubborn about the feeding. They think they're doing an okay thing, you know.
Well, they're compassionate.
These horses don't need to be fed. I mean, it's totally against their nature, for one thing, and it keeps them in the town, and they keep coming around. So, you know, these are things little by little. When people get educated and all that stops, that's going to help the problem.
Is there a way to push these horses down into the industrial park?
Well, I don't know how many. There are quite a few down there now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we talked about in Lockwood, to try and move, you know, this one group of horses down there. But the problem is with relocating, if you relocate one band, then another band comes in. So
what's going to happen in town is they're going to call the sheriff, and the sheriff's going to have to call the Department of Ag, and they're going to have to come remove these horses.
Yeah, well, I know. That's why we're trying to stop the vicious cycle, because that's what's been happening in the past.
Right.
So we are trying.
That's I'm on your side. Don't get me wrong.
I know.
I'm on your side.
No, I know. And you've got a beautiful home with a nice lawn. And I know you're one of my, because we hung a door hanger on your door. So we are trying. And it's just, it's one of those things. I mean, we've got a lot of horses, and we need more volunteers. We're always looking for volunteers to help. So that's why I say 2017, you know, we should start seeing a reduction. And it's, we're not going to be able to dart every single mare in the Virginia range. That's totally impractical. We're not going to find every single band in the Virginia range. But there are horses that hang out in certain, like, they've already documented 1,000. That's half of what the Department of Ag says is on the range. So
which is probably half of what there really is. There's probably 4,000 on the range.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think there are that many. I don't think the range could sustain.
I see the horses in town, and I've seen them for years. There's usually a band of 4, 6, 7,
yeah,
something like that. Now there's 20 in this one band.
Yeah.
I see it, you see them almost every day if you ever drive around town. And they're going through people's yard. They're trampling lawns and eating their flowers and whatever is green.
Well, I haven't had any calls.
And you mentioned there are quite a few out of Tri now, and there are. We were out there for the groundbreaking ceremony for the highway, and I couldn't believe how many horses. I've been out there several times, but all of a sudden there was horses everywhere. Yeah.
And they've already started darting, doing the birth control at them. Off of USA Parkway up there. So all I can say is we are trying, and just being able now to work with the Department of Ag in a cooperative fashion, whereas before we couldn't get the time of day, more or less. So,
Pat's got some questions for you too, Val.
Sure.
Just one, but first off, the compliment I give you every time I hang up the phone or as I'm hanging up the phone, I think... You know, again, I like Marshall Spriggs. We're on your side because you're on our side. You know, you have never, in any dealing that I've had with you, not brought some level of solution or at least potential solution, and you're not. Oftentimes what I find is, like, we have this problem. What are you going to do about it, county? And I love that about you, and I'm especially appreciative. I think oftentimes... You know, the Highlands people may or may not think of themselves as the Highlands. And the Lockwood people may, Mark Twain may, Virginia City may, probably does. But your efforts in particular, I think, out in Lockwood are heroic. You know, that you have probably applied more time, love, and money out there to help mitigate the issue in Rainbow Bend and Lockwood, I think, is a tremendous appreciation by me. So my question is, okay, so we're trying to get Department of Ag to approve these alternative feeding sites so we can draw the horses out of Virginia City.
Right.
Is there some pressure we can put on Department of Ag, you know, through the governor's chief of staff or through somebody that says, hey, let's get this done because in the wintertime it won't be a problem.
Right. Flint Wright is the gentleman... And I've got his phone number and my phone.
Okay.
He's the gentleman on his end with the Department of Ag who controls this program. And he works with Denise on our end. And so he would be the one to start because he's been contacted, in fact, a long time ago. So I don't know if someone dropped the ball there or, you know, he just never, at that point he was just not returning calls or he wasn't coming out when he said he would come out to do it. I think some sites have been chosen where it might be a good place to do it. And then, see, that's the thing, Pat. Once we decide, okay, here we're going to do it, we need volunteers who are going to go out there and, you know, get the food out. You need someone with the equipment to do that, a truck, a trailer. We need to put water out there. Who's going to bring the water, you know, fill the water trough? So we know what to do. We just need to get people who are willing to help do it. And it's a commitment. It's really almost a full-time commitment. They don't have to do it every day. They don't feed every single day, but they put enough food out to last for however long. So,
I know you and I chat again in the next couple of days. I'll get the contact information and a better picture, right? I don't know how I can help you with volunteers. I have all the confidence in the world in you and your group.
Well, we do get them. They've kind of got to be vetted, too. They've got to be on the same page with us with the cooperative agreement. We can't have someone going out there and volunteering and then saying, well, I think the birth control is harmful to the horses. But, you know, we've all got to be on the same page, you know, with this. So.
Well, first of all, I want to give my appreciation to what you're doing to help control the herd, you and Bob and your group.
He's done a great job. Bob is.
And also, I think a lot of people in this room don't know that they've also created a camaraderie of the other horse advocates within our area. Slowly teaming together. You've got members from other advocates joining your group.
Right.
And they all know what the issues are, and they're all trying to help do the same thing.
Right.
So it's great to see you all working together.
Yeah.
There used to be a headbutt battle all the time.
All constant. You know, the thing was, everyone was on the same page as far as the horses. They wanted to help the horses, do what's best for the horses. Everyone had a different opinion of how to do it. People weren't working. Even the Department of Ag couldn't even get a phone call back from them. So that has been a major, and Bob Macario, our president of IRPA, has been instrumental. He's a real sensible, reasonable man, and very bright, and he's done an amazing job bringing everyone, you know, getting everyone together. So, and thank you, Pat, for your compliments. I appreciate it, but I'm going to be in Lockwood for a little bit longer because we're not quite done.
Well, I mean, the only other comment I have is I think the sheriff's going to have to talk to Austin about getting his deputies at least raises or a new certification, because that band of 26 was headed my way.
Uh-oh.
And your deputy was out there. You look like a wrangler from any ranch I think I've ever seen on TV. So, great job.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking the time out of your day to come
well,
and give us the report for that.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Beth.
Well, no. Maybe the sheriff could start up a mounted posse, because he was a cowboy in his younger days, too. So, running Mustangs. So. We'll have the Wranglers. We'll have Jerry's Wranglers out there. Okay, next up, item number 18. This is discussion and possible action. Approval of award for fuel and propane contract bids.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to take this, but I'll also look to Mike if I either misspeak or if he wants to chime in. The last time we bid, this contract was in 2013, and we bid it for 3 years because it's a lot of work on staff. And so this time around, we again bid spec'd it for 3 years, but also provided for a provision that at the end of 3 years, it mutually agreed and subject to satisfactory service, that we could renew for a similar period. And there are a multitude of reasons for that. One is it incents the companies to sharpen their pencil as best they can, because these are a spread over cost. And two, it gives them the option to lead or us. And quite honestly, particularly from Mike and formerly Jennifer and now Susan's viewpoint, it's a lot of work breaking these companies in. I mean, changing out the tanks is a big deal. Dealing with new companies, I will tell you the existing provider of propane, it was a pretty rocky road for the first year with Feral Gas. But then they got in their groove. So we had, I'm going to go over propane first, we had two bidders, surprisingly, which is I think the lowest number we've had in a long time. But half of that is I think these companies are becoming, particularly AmeriGas, is becoming bigger and bigger as it gobbles up the little companies. Including good ones like Bi-State. So we have two bids, and I'm going to explain a few of the nuances here. The first one is AmeriGas came in. Okay, we asked the bidders to provide quotes on their spread over the rack rate that they pay, in essence, for their fuel. And their spreads, again, include all tariffs, all freight, all everything. So presuming that the rack rate is an honest quote of cost, we have AmeriGas came in at 22 cents for the county, plus a dollar per tank rental. We rent about probably 65% of our tanks, I think, close anyway, somewhere in there. And then they had a 10 cent a gallon freight, no hazmat fee. We also asked them to go with our employees. In the past, the thinking has been, you know, employee rate versus the county rate, there's some risk. And it's much lower volume. I mean, you know, we each get our tanks filled, you know, in much shorter gulps than we do at the school district. But AmeriGas came in at 22 cents over rack for propane for us and the schools, 50 cents over for employees, which is what we currently have with Feral, and 50 cents for residences, which I want to acknowledge is actually a good rate. But I'm going to go over the recommended winning bid for propane. And that is with our existing provider, Feral Gas. Feral Gas came in at 15 cents over rack as opposed to 22 cents and presumably 32 cents if that 10 cents a gallon freight is in there. So you got 15 cents a gallon for the county, 50 cents for employees, so basically apples to apples on the employee one, much higher, significantly higher on the county one. The residents one was interesting. They're actually higher than AmeriGas at 65 cents. So we drilled a little deeper, and there are multiple reasons why we would recommend taking that higher rate with Ferrellgas on that one element. We asked our current provider, Ferrellgas, how many county residents, not employees, take advantage of the guaranteed rate, and the answer was very few. Quite frankly, the people in the Highlands have their act together, and they get a better rate, you know, than what they're offering. And there just isn't enough volume. But between the school district and the county, we're probably the lion's share. And to save 17 cents a gallon on our mutual propane consumption as a local government entity is huge. So staff recommendation is to go with Ferrellgas. And again, those quoted rates are 15 cents a gallon over rack, no tank rental, no fees, hazmat, fuel surcharges, an employee rate of 50 cents a spread, and a residence rate of 65. That'd be our recommendation on propane. I don't know if you want to take these separately or together.
Well, why don't we give the full presentation, then we'll vote on them separately.
Okay. Okay. Next, we looked at regular gas and diesel gas. And boy, I got to tell you, these guys were all over the board. I mean, it was like comparing apples and watermelons. We had a couple of the bidders that were in there. Some didn't. I stand corrected on that. They all bid. We had at least one entity that refused to bid half of our volume out in the industrial park, and that's not really an accurate statement. It's not quite half. Long story short, they were asked to quote average. It's called rate over OPIS, which is a standard, and it's a standard, a universal standard, if you will, and include federal taxes, excise taxes, federal oil spill tax, and Nevada Superfund taxes. They did not, at least as best we could ascertain. But there's a key element here in why we would recommend taking, again, a slightly higher approach on one. So we have Golden Gate Petroleum was the low bidder for our river district fuel dumps, the school for propane, I believe, at Hillside. And then we've got gas and, I think, diesel tanks at both Lockwood and also now back out in Try again. They came in at 8 cents a gallon spread. The other ones, real quick, are Interstate Oil at 12 cents, Flyers at 30 cents, which seemed totally wrong. Carson Valley refused to bid the River District, and Thomas Fuels, which is also known as Pilot, bid 10 cents. So we're going to recommend splitting the gas and diesel bill business contracts, as we have done last time, and we're going to recommend awarding it to Golden Gate as the hands-down winner. It gets a little more complex than that when it comes to Virginia City and the Virginia City Highlands, keeping in mind that, you know, we have three schools in Virginia City, and the bulk of our fleet is here and fuels here, as opposed to the other two locations that I mentioned on the River District. And the Highlands is, I don't know if it's used much, to tell you the truth. It's probably the only user is the fire department, as far as I can tell. So with the Virginia City and Virginia City Highlands bids, Pilot bid 6 cents on DC business and 10 cents on BC Highlands business over all that, plus all the taxes. And they bid exactly the same. They bid 6 cents on diesel as well. So they're the same. 6 cents over in Virginia City, 10 cents over at the Highlands. The only competitive bid to look at was Carson Valley Oil. The others were at 12 cents, 12 cents, or 30 and 40 cents. I really don't think Flyers wanted our business, even though we currently have them, I believe. Long story short, if you look at the Carson Valley bid of 8 cents and 10 cents as opposed to 6 cents and 10 cents, on the surface, We're getting a substantially better deal in Virginia City at 6 cents, and we're getting an identical deal, I guess, on diesel there. So we went with Thomas Fuels Pilot, and they're willing to just take that piece of the business. So both companies were willing to, in essence, take half a bite at the apple instead of a whole bite. So those are our recommendations. Would be Golden Gate for the River District and Pilot Thomas Fuels for the Virginia City and Highlands areas. I miss anything, Mike?
All right, we're open for public comment now. Anybody like to talk about the fuel bids?
I might add, if I may, there was another key element back on the propane side that I neglected to mention, and, you know, AmeriGas is making a valiant bid at the last minute with a Hail Mary at 9:41 this morning in an email. You know, they're saying we could take that difference in their proposed bid of 50 cents for our residents versus Feral 65, and we could make that become a PR boom by taking all the credit and doing that stuff. Again, there are not that many users, and there is one other funky element in this thing. We asked them to bid over rack rate, and specifically, I think, over either Reno or Sparks rack rates. AmeriGas did not bid over rack rate. They bid over a Targus Resources Index that we've learned is a wholly owned, wholly controlled by AmeriGas. So they control their prices. And also, that's it. I'll stop. There was one more element in here, but I didn't just get confusing. So
wow. We
still recommend Feral Gas.
Okay. Once again, I'll ask if there's any public comment on the fuel bid, fuel and propane bid. Hearing none? Okay. Commissioner McGuffey, looking for a motion to go ahead, entertain a motion to accept the propane bid from Feral Gas.
Do I do all three if you like, or do we want to do them separate?
Well, we can do all three together, but and then accept.
Do them separate.
Pardon me?
I think it's best to do them separate.
Okay.
Okay. I'll make a motion to approve to award the contract for propane to Feral Gas.
And I'll second your motion. And move to second to approve the propane bid to Feral Gas. That'll be a 3-year contract, a 3-year option. Is that correct?
That is correct, with an option upon mutually agreeing to extend for a similar year.
Okay. So we move to second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay. Moving along now to the fuel bid. This will be for the Lockwood and the TRI locations. And so I need a motion to go ahead and accept Golden Gate Petroleum's bid for Lockwood and the TRI.
I'll make a motion to award the fuel bid to Golden Gate for the River District.
And I'll second your motion. Move to second to award the contract to Golden Gate Petroleum. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to looking for a motion for the fuel bids for Virginia City and Virginia City Highlands, and that to be to Pilot Thomas Fuels. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, I think their trucks are branded Pilot, but the
company name is Thomas Fuels. So anyway, once again, that would be for Virginia City and Virginia City Highlands.
I'll make a motion to approve or award the contract for fuel for Virginia City and Virginia City Highlands to Thomas Fuel.
Thomas Pilot Thomas. Okay. And I'll second your motion. We moved a second to award the fuel bid for Thomas Fuels Pilot for the Virginia City and Virginia City Highlands areas. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, in closing, I'd like Mike to take back the message from you folks and me, a special thank you shout out to Susan. We only do this every 3 years, and it's like trying to relearn everything all over again. I don't think Susan, I think you lied to Susan, Jennifer, when you last did it and said, oh, this is a piece of cake. Susan did a great job herding turkeys, and I'm especially grateful that we're able to award some business to Golden Gate Petroleum, because keep in mind, they have a massive plant investment in our county out at Tri. This is the crack plant. We also, the 50% of our gas stations right now, and probably 95% of our fuel taxes come from their Golden Gate facility in Tri. So that's it.
Great. I think we should do this every year. I think we used to award the bids every year, didn't we?
We did for a while, yeah.
Okay, going to move along now to item number 19, discussion of possible action. Approval of permanent grant of easements and temporary grant for easements to Story County from private property owners in the Six Mile Canyon area for activities related to the Six Mile Canyon Storm Drains Improvement Project, and authorization for the commission chairman or his designee to sign grant easements. Sherry Nevin.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Sherry Nevin, for the record. We've been working on this grant for years now. I'm not going to state the year. But this is the next hurdle we have to cross to pass the environmental for the Six Mile Canyon Storm Drainage Improvement Project, which will be funded through a FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, pre-disaster mitigation grant. There are several parcels of land in the Six Mile Canyon area that are owned by private property owners, and this grant is requiring Story County to obtain grants of easement, both permanent and temporary, for this project. So these easements will allow us to construct, operate, add to, modify, maintain, and remove above ground and our underground storm facilities consisting of culverts, riprap, rock and drainage improvements upon, over, under, and through the properties described in the grants. So the permanent will be so basically we can maintain the drainage, and the temporary will basically be for staging of construction or material during the project. So we worked with four different private property owners. They were all very good to work with. So just asking for your approval on these easements, and we can move forward.
Yeah, there's a lot of easements in there.
Yeah, quite a few.
Is there any public comment regarding this item?
Would landowners be able to go in and modify what we've done to, like, maybe change their access to their property?
There's a stipulation in here, and we worked with legal on that, that they would have to, we'd have to be mutually agreed upon. So people aren't just going in there and tearing up what we did.
Yeah,
and we met, we met on site with all the property owners except for United Mines, because they're out of state, but we corresponded heavily, and Mr. Redekin actually does some, he kind of looks after their property down there, so he was well aware of what we were doing. So okay. We actually met some people on site a couple of times, so it's been a process working to get these all together. But
yeah. Okay. Once again, I'll ask if there's any public comment. Hearing that, Commissioner McGuffey, your motion.
I'll move to approve the permanent grant of easements and temporary grant for easements to Story County from private property owners noted as Cote, Dumay, Redekin, and United Mines in the Six Mile Canyon area for activities related to the Six Mile Canyon Storm Drainage Improvement Project, and authorization for the commission chairman or his designee to sign grant of easements.
Second your motion. It's been moved to second to approve the permanent grant easements and the temporary grant easements for this project. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 20, discussion of possible action. Canvas of the election results for the primary election held in and for Story County, State of Nevada on June 14, 2016.
We only do this once every 2 years.
Usually you just read the results and then...
Okay.
Which I would be happy to do for you if you wish.
Okay. Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, for Story County, these are the election results for June 14th, 2016. We, for some reason, are unable to calculate percentage of turnout, but we had 728 total people voting. Do we know what it is?
26.
26, which is...
higher than the statewide average significantly.
But pretty bad even for Surrey County. Surrey County has a better turnout.
Yeah, exactly.
The record will reflect the various party breakdowns, and I don't believe that's required. So I'm going to go through the election results and for Democratic U.S. Senator, keeping in mind that this is a partisan primary. Catherine Cortez Masto was the winner with 193 votes. Bobby Mahindra had 9. Lido Susan O'Brien had 6. Alan Reinhart had 12. And none of these candidates had 9 for a total of 229 votes cast. For the Democratic representative in Congress District 2, the victor was H.D. Chip Evans with 98 votes. Vance Ulm had 34, and Rick Shepard had 79 for a total of 211 votes. For Republican U.S. Senator, the victor was Joe Heck, and the results are Sharon Engel, 183, Denise Davis, 13, Eddie Hamilton, 2, Thomas Sad Tom Heck, 17, Robert X. Leeds, 1, Carlo Mazunga Poliak, 0, Justin J. Preble, 1, Bill Tarle, 1, none of these candidates, 17. Those are the results of the primary election of June 14, 2016.
Thank you. Any public comment regarding the election results? None. Mr. McGuffey, can I get a motion to approve the election results?
Yes, I'll make a motion to approve the results for the primary election held in and for Story County, State of Nevada, on June 14, 2016.
Second the motion. We move to second to approve the election results for the primary election. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 21, discussion and possible action to appoint members to the committees to prepare arguments advocating and opposing the ballot question regarding AB 191 relating to motor vehicle fuel tax indexing, and to take any additional action required or permitted by NRS 295.121, which establishes the provisions relating to the appointment of such members and preparation of arguments. So.
Okay, so this is a question that will appear on our ballot in November for the state. Part of the process is that you direct me to create committees that will prepare arguments for and against this ballot question. We're fortunate that NACO has done a lot of the homework for us. So once we get these committees established, they'll be able to use the language that's been provided. They can modify it, make changes. And once that's all approved, it'll come back before you guys for final approval to be put on the ballot. So today I just need for you guys to direct me to establish committees.
Okay.
May I ask a question? Okay. Did we discuss an alternative, though, that since we have NACO, NACO suggested language that will hopefully be consistent with most of the other jurisdictions. Are committees still necessary, or?
They are. We have to at least try to establish the committees. If I'm unsuccessful in that, then there's a different road to go. But we have to start with trying to get these committees together.
Got it. That's it. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Any public comment regarding this matter? Seeing none, Commissioner McGuffey, I think looking for a motion to direct the county clerk to go ahead and establish any committees that she deems necessary to go ahead and produce the arguments for this this assembly bill.
I'll make a motion for the county clerk to appoint members to the committee to prepare arguments of advocating and opposing the ballot question regarding AB 191 related to motor vehicle fuel tax indexing, and to take any additional action required for permitted by NRS Statute 295.121, which establishes the provisions relating to the appointment of such members and preparation of arguments.
We'll second the motion. It's been moved and second to approve directing the county clerk to handle this. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 22. Discussion of possible action, approval of short-term extension to collective bargaining agreement CBA between Story County, Nevada and Comstock Chapter, Ask Me Local 4041. for July 1st, 2013 through June 30th, 2016, CBA, to August the 16th of 2016, or until a succeeding CBA is approved by the Board of Story County Commissioners, whichever comes first, in order to allow collective bargaining between the parties to continue beyond the current CBA period. So,
Mr. Chairman, I can take that if you wish.
Go ahead.
In Austin's absence, this happens periodically with contract negotiations where, you know, you continue a very positive dialogue back and forth, but you're just not quite there as the existing contract comes to its sunset. So this is fairly routine for local governments to do, and I'm going to read a prepared statement Austin gave me to read into the record. This extension will allow added time necessary for the county and union to continue bargaining fiscal and non-fiscal matters of the existing CBA, which expires July 1, 2016. The parties are in full cooperation in the bargaining process, and they mutually agree to this extension. The extension expires August 16th by the August 16th regular board meeting, or when a tentative agreement is reached and approved by the board in open meeting, whichever comes first. So it's just giving us a little more time to continue down the track we are.
That's good. Any public comment? Jack? You got a motion to go ahead and continue this CBA?
Based on the recommendation by staff, I make a motion to approve a short-term extension of collective bargaining agreement between Story County, Nevada, and Comstock Chapter AFSCME Local 4041, July 1st, 2013 through June 30th, 2016. The CBA to August 16th, 2016, or until a succeeding CBA is approved by the Board of Story County Commissioners, whichever comes first, in order to allow collective bargaining between the parties to continue beyond the current CBA period.
Second your motion. Moved and second to approve the short-term extension of the collective bargaining agreement between Story County and ASME Local 4041. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. This time we'll go ahead and recess and convene as the Story County Fire Protection District Board. Moving along now to item number 23. Discussion, possible action. Approval of Resolution 16-439, augmentation of the Fire Protection District. Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We try and conduct this thing. We were trying to conduct this on a quarterly basis before. This is pretty much what the State Department of Taxation calls a cleaning up period, for which we can, under NRS 354-598, under procedures for requirements for augmentations of amending budgets and amending budgets, and we can do this in several ways. Unappropriated any fund balance of any government fund, with the exception of capital project funds, an opening balance which is larger than anticipated, revenues in excess of those budgeted, and revenues generated from previously unbudgeted resources, and unappropriated ending fund balances in capital project funds. Our first is number 23, which is Resolution 16-439, augmentation of the Fire Protection District budget by an amount of $581,858. This was done by unanticipated revenue sources of federal grants of $443,158, building permits of $68,000, business license fees of $45,700, and state centrally assessed overages of $25,000. This $581,000 will be used for salaries of $350,000, PERS of $174,000, and PAC, which is the Public Agency Compensation Trust, of $50,858. Mr. Chairman, I recommend your approval.
Very good. You have any questions?
I have no questions. No questions.
Okay. Go ahead and take any public comment on this item.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, because there were some last-minute number crunching on essentially all of these, we opted to leave the specific dollar amount off on the agenda itself while we were finalizing. So if you would please, in your motion, include the dollar amount on this one of $581,858, as indicated on page 2, that would be appropriate.
Okay. Once again, I'll call for any public comment. Hearing none, go ahead and look for a motion to approve resolution 16-439 in the amount of $581,858.
I'll make a motion for the approval of resolution 16-439, augmentation of the Fire Protection District in the amount of $581,858.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve resolution 16-439. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 24, discussion of possible action, approval of resolution 16-440, augmentation of the mutual aid fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Resolution 16-440, augmentation of the mutual aid fund in the amount of $376,000. Revenues were higher than anticipated revenues from off-district billings, and those appropriations will go to in the following line items: overtime of $111,000, health insurance of $16,000, Medicare of $1,600, Social Security of $1,100, capital outlay of $222,000, fire suppression of $21,000, and fire protection of $3,300.
Very good. Any public comment on this item? Hearing none. Looking for a motion to go ahead and approve the resolution 16-440, the amount of $365,760. For the augmentation of the mutual aid fund.
Isn't that $376,000?
Yes.
Pardon me?
$376,000.
I think that's correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I stand corrected. $376,000.
Okay. I'm making a motion to approve the resolution 16-440, augmentation of mutual aid fund for the amount of $376,000.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved and seconded to approve resolution 16-440 in the amount of $376,000. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 25, discussion of possible action, approval of transfer of appropriations from contingency to be split among various accounts pursuant to NRS 354-598005.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Transfer of appropriations, it will be from the contingency for the Fire Protection District in the amount of $101,300. This contingency amount will be going towards the following line items: telephone in the amount of $11,000, communications in the amount of $13,700, computer software in the amount of $9,300, personal protective equipment in the amount of $62,500, and tires of $4,800.
All right. Any public comment regarding this item? Hearing none, call for a motion to approve it.
So you have a contingency fund, and now you're pulling money out of that to add to these budgets?
Right. We have two ways of doing it within the 474 Fire District. Mr. McGuffey, it was we wanted to transfer some monies because we had some higher-than-anticipated revenues but we also had some other funds in the contingency to go ahead and do this. I didn't think we had enough to do it out of higher than anticipated revenues. And this all is because of the staffing of Station 75. This wasn't enough. We never budgeted that into the 2015 budget, 15-16 budget. So, but we have in the 16-17 budget, so we had to go to two different sources now in order to accomplish this.
Okay. Now, do I understand that Tesla is funding a lot of this for this fire station?
I mean, the bulk of the cost, absolutely. Now, we're not getting specific funding from Tri on this.
No.
But the cost of reactivating that station this past year was extraordinary. I mean, it's been mothballed for 5, 6, 7 years. And I would attest to the fact that some of the overhead costs that we factored into our Tesla agreement should have a provision in there, but not $101,000.
Okay.
I'm okay.
I'm good.
Okay. Any public comment on this item? Okay, hearing none. Looking for a motion to approve the transfer of appropriations in the amount of $101,300. Is that correct? Did I get the numbers right?
Yes.
Okay. $101,300.
I'll make a motion to approve the transfer of appropriations from contingency fund to be split among various accounts that were noted pursuant to NRS 354-598-005 for the amount of $101,300.
I'll second your motion. We move to second to approve the transfer of appropriations in the amount of $101,300. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Okay. At this time, we're going to adjourn as the Fire Protection District Board and reconvene as the Story County Board of County Commissioners. Moving along now to item number 26, discussion of possible action, approval of resolution 16-441, augmentation of the equipment acquisition fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Resolution 16-441, augmentation of the equipment acquisition fund in the amount of $155,000. This will be accomplished by equipment, unanticipated revenue sources due to equipment sales of $155,000, and they will be appropriately be budgeted to the capital outlay expense item of $155,000.
Do you have any questions on that?
Questions here.
Okay. Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, looking for a motion to approve resolution 16-441 in the amount of $155,000.
I'll make a motion for the approval of Resolution 16-441, Augmentation of Equipment Acquisition Fund, in the amount of $155,000.
I'll second your motion. It's been moved to second to approve Resolution 16-441, in the amount of $155,000. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 27, discussion of possible action. Approval of Resolution 16-442, Augmentation of the Genetic Marker Fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Resolution 16-442, this is the augmentation of the Genetic Marker Fund in the amount of $1,243. That is from unanticipated resources, from chemical analysis revenue in the amount of $1,243. Those appropriations will be going to a light item, which is 180-51010, in the amount of $1,243.
All right. Any public comment regarding this item? For a motion to approve Resolution 16-442, augmentation of the Genetic Marker Fund, in the amount of $1,243.
I'll make a motion for approve the resolutions for 16-442, augmentation of the Genetic Marker Fund for the amount of $1,243.
I'll second your motion. We move to second to approve resolution 16-442. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Number 28 on the agenda, discussion of possible action. Approval of transfer of appropriations from contingency to be split between salaries, benefits, service and supplies, and capital outlay pursuant to NRS 354-598005.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the transfer of appropriations from the general fund contingency in the amount of $70,500. $270,500. The resources were from higher than anticipated revenues. The contingency amounts will be distributed as follows: $20,000 to commissioner salaries, $4,600 to commissioner's benefits, $57,000 to services and supplies for the county treasurer, $20,000 for salaries in administrative, $10,000 in PERS for administrative, $3,300 for sheriff uniforms, $1,500 for sheriff fingerprinting background, $7,500 for sheriff garnishments, $6,650 for coroner's office sheriff, $3,050 for inmate medical as applied to the sheriff, $22,500 for sheriff inmate food, $4,000 for sheriff inmate supplies, $31,000 for capital outlay of community development, which is one new vehicle, $2,000 for community development for a new iPad, $4,600 for computer equipment for the district attorney, which is the new phone system, $40,000 for professional services for the district attorney, $13,000 for professional services for the comptroller's office, which included a lot of outside services for a person by the name of Tom Gransberry, who's doing a lot of our stuff with Department of Taxation and other essential, I think, duties. $15,000 for salaries for emergency management and $4,800 for PERS for emergency management.
Yeah, I might add, on some of the larger ticket items for the sheriff's office, those are related to the unanticipated but pleasant advent of the Bureau of Indian Affairs contract, where we're getting reimbursed for it.
Okay. All right. Any public comment on this item? Hearing none, look for a motion to approve this. The approval of transfer of appropriations for contingency to be split between the salaries, benefits, and that, in the amount of $270,500.
I'll move to approve the transfer of appropriations from contingency to be split between salaries, benefits, service, supplies, and capital outlay as described, pursuant to NRS 354.598005 for the amount of $270,500.
I'll second your motion. It's moved and seconded to approve the transfer of appropriations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Moving along now to item number 29, discussion of possible action. Approval of transfer of appropriations from sheriff salaries and benefits to admin salaries and benefits pursuant to NRS 354.598005.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This transfer of appropriations, as you stated, is from the sheriff salaries and benefits to administrative salaries and benefits in the amount of $29,116. This is in regards to a movement of a position. Those will be allocated in the following way: $16,117 to administrative salaries, $6,528 to administrative PERS, $3,010 to administrative PAC, $3,227 to administrative insurance, and $234 to administrative Medicare, all total in the amount of, again, $29,116.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher. Any public comment on this item? Hearing none. Commissioner, can I get a motion to approve the transfer of appropriations from the sheriff's salaries and benefits to admin?
I'll move to approve the transfer of appropriations from sheriff's salaries and benefits to admin salaries and benefits pursuant to NRS 354.598005 for the amount of $29,116.
I'll go ahead and second your motion. Then move to second to approve the transfer of appropriations in the amount of $29,116. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously. Right now we're going to go ahead and...
Can I suggest something?
Yeah.
I wish I'd have known who you were. We've had a gentleman waiting very patiently.
Yes.
And I believe you're Mr. Chevalier. Chevalier, excuse me. I have to work on my French. But he is item 34. Perhaps we could speed that one up. I think Jason's ready, and that way you don't have to sit through much longer.
He's a car club guy. He can wait.
I wouldn't know. I never go.
Sure. We can do that. We can move Kevin up. So we're going to do that. We're going to do a little change on today's agenda. We're going to go right down to item number 34. This is discussion of possible action. Special use permit 2016-008 by Kevin and Andre Chevalier. The applicants request a special use permit to operate a business for classic automobile chassis.
Did he say something?
No.
Okay. Mechanical and body restoration in a CR zone location at 790 South A Street, Virginia City, Nevada, APN 001-041-12. His residence sits up on the divide right behind the new famed athletic center. Go ahead, Jason.
Yes. Yep. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, as you pointed out, Kevin's here. If you have any questions at any point. The address, 790 South A Street, as Mr. Chairman pointed out, it's located behind the MX Trophy and Divide Fitness facility, approximately 150 feet away. It is currently zoned as a CR zone, which is commercial residential zone. The allowance of this kind of a business is regulated through the special use permit process, and that's why we're here today. The area does not seem to be subject to any potential adverse impacts. The applicant is assured that his high-end automobile restoration business is not going to be causing any adverse impacts in the area. The staff believes that the potential impacts in the area would consist of noise or air contaminants or fire issues, and each of those are outlined, or traffic impacts, and each of those are outlined on pages 4 and 5 of your staff report, and with some potential mitigating or ways to mitigate any potential impacts. So staff believes that the potential adverse impacts in the area are well addressed. To move the topic right along, to date there's been no public comment on the issue. The Planning Commission recommended approval. They did want to address, bring special attention to the storage issue. And the storage is going to be inside and enclosed with the allowance of one vehicle to be stored external as either enclosed storage or open side storage, like a carport. So with those recommendations from the Planning Commission, I welcome any comments or questions you may have.
Yeah, well, I attended the Planning Commission meeting when this was approved, and I know that there didn't seem to be any concerns regarding this special use permit. Well, I think you might have been there, too.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
I don't see any, I see that it was a chance of any nuisance, like abandoned-type-looking vehicles sitting out around. I see that's been addressed, that in part. It's just you don't want to turn it into an eyesore, and I don't think Kevin's that kind of guy anyway. I am wondering, though, is it's like I've been in your shop. It's kind of tight quarters already. Are you going to plan on building?
One of the vehicles going to be sold there, pretty sure.
Yeah. Do you have room to build another building? Or?
I believe so, yes. Yeah. We've actually started to build a house about putting an extension out
there. Is there a potential for any neighbors? Yeah, I mean, this place is the only one up there on the hill right now.
He's the only one who's willing to take the wind.
Yeah.
There are empty lots in the area, and so there, I suppose there is potential of development of some sort in the area. Once you move further north of the building, there aren't any public roads or any public services up there at this point, so that would be a much more challenging development.
Well, further north is you're in the pit,
yeah.
Pretty much.
That's one way of putting it. I did want to bring special attention to, I did offer three potential motions. One was to approve the auto restoration business and to approve body work on site. There's a special special concern with doing body work, especially painting on site. The applicant will, one of the conditions is that any painting work will be done inside of a spray booth, so it'll be contained. However, that's an extra level of concern, extra level of fire constraint that is conditioned into the potential special use permit. So if the body work with painting is allowed on site, there's another level of conditions on the special use permit. The second potential motion that I supplied was just approving the business with doing the restoration work on site, but taking the body work, especially the painting work, off site. And then the third option was a rejection.
If he was to do on-site painting, he's going to fall under the guidelines of Nevada Environmental Protection, right?
Yes. Well, NDEP regulations NDEP. Do cover the regulations on that. Yes.
Yeah. So I think you're covered there.
Yeah, and a lot of these paint booths that you can purchase these days, they're pretty easy to erect, and they are like pre-approved by EPA
and
stuff like that.
Yes.
Any public comment regarding the special use permit? Hearing none.
I'll make a motion.
I'd like to read the findings of fact regarding approving the paint and body. Repair. Commissioner McGuffey. What are your thoughts?
Well, we have a recommended motion.
We need to read the findings. So the findings motion you want to read.
Okay, we'll let
Jason read the findings.
Jason, would you please read the findings?
And yeah. Which one were you looking at?
I was recommending it. The first one that you mentioned, including paint and body work.
That's the recommended motion.
Okay.
That's the recommended motion.
Okay,
the findings for approval, 5.1.1. The special use permit complies with all federal, state, and county regulations. 5.1.2, the special use permit will not impose substantial adverse impacts or safety hazards on the adjacent properties or the surrounding area. 5.1.3, the conditions of the special use permit adequately address potential fire hazards and require compliance with applicable fire codes, including fire protection ratings. 5.1.4, use will not adversely affect the existing South Street, B or A Street, and if the use does impact the road, the applicant will maintain the affected streets to a condition as conditions of this special use permit approval. 5.1.5, any paint or body work will be mitigated appropriately to maintain public health and safety. 5.1.6, the conditions under the special use permit will not conflict with the minimum requirements of the Stewart County Code, Chapter 17.12, Special Provisions, 17.30, CR Zone.
I think you said special provisions when it's general provisions.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And Chapter 17.3.15, Special Use Permits, or any other federal, state, or county regulations, including building and fire codes.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Montalvo. So, we have a motion to approve special use permit based on the findings of fact outlined by Jason Van Havel.
I'll make a motion to approve a special use permit in accordance with the recommendation by Planning Commission and staff, the findings under Section 5.1 of the staff report, and other findings deemed appropriate by the Board of County Commissioners, and in the compliance with the condition of approval in Section 6 of this report, I hereby recommend conditional approval of special use permit application number 2016-008 for the operation of the automobile restoration business, including local body and paint work, located at 790 South A Street, Virginia City, Story County, Nevada, APN 001-041-12.
Thank you. I'll second your motion. It's been moved and second to approve special use permit 2016-008. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries unanimously.
Thank
Good
you.
Luck.
Good luck, Kevin.
You bet.
I got a Mustang. I got a Mustang to talk to you about.
Okay. At this time, we'll go ahead and we'll reset as the. Pardon me? You want to take a 5-minute break?
Sure.
Okay. Let's recess for about 5 minutes.